You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, a podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. Our question for the day is, olfactory reference syndrome, what is it? I'm your host, Dr. Noah Laracy. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hello, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral and cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. And we're again recording from Washington, D.C., where we're attending the ADAA conference, and we're once again lucky to have Dr. Catherine Phillips here as our guest. Hello, Dr. Phillips.
Hello.
Catherine Phillips, MD, is internationally known for her expertise in body dysmorphic disorder and related disorders. She's on the faculty at Weill Cornell Medical College and is a psychiatrist at New York Presbyterian Hospital, both in New York City. She is also professor of psychiatry and human behavior at the Alpert Medical School of Brown University. So, Dr. Phillips, today we're going to talk about olfactory reference syndrome, which I think you are probably the leading expert on, so the right person on. Can you tell us a little bit first, what is olfactory reference syndrome?
Olfactory reference syndrome is a very under-recognized condition that can cause tremendous suffering. People with olfactory reference syndrome, ORS for short, worry that they emit an unpleasant or foul body odor, when in fact they don't. And they typically engage in all kinds of repetitive behaviors to try to get rid of the odor. And this problem can cause really significant emotional distress, interfere with day-to-day functioning, and it's something that they typically think about for many, many hours a day.
So is this one odor, or is it many odors that they feel like they're emitting?
It can be either. So some focus just on one, others multiple odors. Remember, they actually smell normal. They do not smell badly, but they think that they're emitting these odors, which most commonly come from the mouth. So they may worry about bad breath, or from the armpits. They worry about smelling sweaty, but they can worry about genital odor, anal odor, like flatulence. Sometimes they think they have stinky feet. Sometimes they think the odor is coming from their skin. So they can misperceive it as coming from all these different body areas.
And what type of things do they do to check or to avoid having this odor?
Well, they do things that kind of make sense in a way. If you thought you smelled bad, you might do some of these things yourself, but they're very excessive and repetitive and very time consuming. And they do things like checking to see if they smell bad. So lifting up their arm and trying to smell their armpit, or blowing their breath against a cupped hand in front of their face so they can try and catch their breath and see if they can smell it. They may change their clothes a lot during the day because they think they're making their clothes stinky. Some wash their clothes 3, 4, 5 times a day, thinking that really just have to get that odor out. Again, the clothes smell fine. They may ask others for reassurance about how they smell. And then they usually do various camouflaging efforts, trying to hide the perceived odor. So for perceived bad breath, they may do things like use, you know, mouthwash over and over again throughout the day, or buy special brands of prescription mouthwash or prescription deodorants and use them repeatedly throughout the day. A lot of excessive toothbrushing, which if you do it a lot, isn't necessarily good for your teeth because you may start scraping your enamel off. So lots of perfume, excessive perfume, cologne, excessive showering with lots of soap. I saw one woman who thought she smelled terrible. No one could smell a thing. And she carried around a bottle of ammonia with her. And she sat in my waiting room, constantly sprayed her entire body, her clothes, her body with the ammonia, sprayed it in the air around her. So people will do all kinds of things to try and mask the perceived odor.
It sounds like in their efforts to reduce the odors, they might actually be creating more with that ammonia.
If they smell at all, they usually smell actually good, because usually the ammonia is a little unusual. Usually they're using things like perfume or cologne, lots of deodorant, or lots of laundry detergent. So if anything, they never smell offensive. I'll put it that way.
So this sounds very similar to BDD or OCD. Is ORS just a subtype?
That's a good question. We don't really know. Olfactory reference syndrome, ORS, hasn't been studied that much. Very little compared with body dysmorphic disorder, especially compared with OCD, which has been studied a lot. But it does have features in common with both conditions. I think actually it's most similar to body dysmorphic disorder, BDD, because there is the bodily preoccupation, something's wrong with your body, physical appearance in BDD, body odor in ORS, although remember, there's really nothing wrong with how people look in BDD or smell in ORS. But there's the obsessional preoccupation that something's wrong with the body. There are the repetitive behaviors. There are the camouflaging efforts, for example, with makeup in BDD and with perfume and ORS. And I think what's similar about them is both conditions are characterized by poor insight. So they think their belief is actually true, definitely or probably true. In fact, there's even more conviction, we think, in olfactory reference syndrome. And that may be because in ORS, most people say they actually smell the odor. And we were just talking about in body dysmorphic disorder, people actually seem to see differently than people without BDD do, how they have visual perceptual distortions. Another thing is very, and that's different than OCD, where insight tends to be pretty good. I think another similarity that's important between body dysmorphic disorder and olfactory reference syndrome is that most people with these conditions tend to misperceive what's going on around them in the environment. They misperceive other people's behavior, and they think that others are reacting in a negative way to how they look in the case of BDD or how they smell in the case of ORS. And that leads to a lot of social avoidance, typically, a lot of social anxiety. So I think that these two conditions are very, very similar. I think there are some differences. I don't think they're exactly the same condition. There are similarities with OCD, most notably the repetitive obsessional thoughts and preoccupations. But also, as we were talking earlier for BDD, I think there are lots of overlaps with social anxiety disorder.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. Yeah. Because with ORS, it seems like there's a concern that not only that you smell bad or you think you smell bad, but that other people are going to smell it too. When they do smell it, something bad is going to happen.
Yes, and they're going to judge you negatively as a result. And, you know, that you're going to be humiliated by simply smelling bad and you'll be negatively judged. So that's something that olfactory reference syndrome and body dysmorphic disorder and social anxiety disorder all have in common.
So with BDD, there's been a lot of research on the brain functions and how the person zooms in on very detailed oriented perception of their appearance.
Yeah.
Has there been any research for ORS?
We have to start at the beginning with ORS. We have to better characterize its clinical symptoms and come up with better diagnostic measures so we can even figure out who to put in studies. And then we need these kinds of studies, which haven't been done. So we think that some people with ORS actually experience olfactory hallucinations, but we're not sure. We actually have some data. We haven't analyzed our data yet to see, are they unusually sensitive to odors or not? Might they actually be smelling something that to others is undetectable? We don't know that. What is going on in the brains of people with ORS? Are they actually experiencing hallucinations pertaining to body odor? We don't know. So these are studies that really need to be done.
So perhaps the person with ORS have very high olfactory sensations, and maybe they detect something that we ordinary humans don't.
Maybe. Even then, though, you know, it's a little hard to explain why, if they're using lots of perfume and tons of very strong mouthwash and lots of deodorant, and they've laundered their clothes and, you know, they're smelling good, you know, how are they not able to recognize that? Why do they seem to be so sensitive to something others aren't smelling? It's a mystery. We don't have an answer to that.
What if they really do smell? What if this is someone who really is emitting body odor and they're excessively concerned,
right?
Or they're excessively camouflaging their body odor.
Right. Well, I think in that case, we probably would not diagnose olfactory reference syndrome. We would probably give them a diagnosis like it's a mouthful, but something like other specified obsessive compulsive disorder, which it already is. That is actually how it is currently classified. But we'd probably give it that designation, but make it clear if they were preoccupied about it and if it was causing significant distress or impairment in functioning, but they really smelled bad. We just give it a slightly different, we designate it slightly differently. We might treat it the same way, though.
What is the usual impairment in function? Is it the time they're spent concerned about this, or is it depression? What is the usual impairment?
On average, they're obsessing about this for many, many hours a day. We have found in our studies 3 to 8 hours a day, and they're usually very distressed over this. So that can cover a range of negative emotions, anxiety, social anxiety, depression, in suicidal thinking. We find very high rates of suicidal ideation in people with olfactory reference syndrome, impairment in day-to-day functioning. In my experience, and based on the data we have, there's a range of impairment in functioning, but they tend to be quite impaired. And things like avoiding social situations because they think they smell bad and they'll be judged negatively for it. Problems concentrating because they're so distracted by these worries about how they smell. Maybe losing a job because they're going late, trying to get themselves smelling decent enough to go. They're maybe caught up in their rituals in the morning. I've seen many patients who have quit their jobs because they thought people were commenting negatively on their body odor. And they tend to misinterpret very neutral comments. So for example, if someone says it's stuffy in here, they may think that that's an oblique reference to they're smelling bad. Or someone says, oh, you know, let's open the window and just get some fresh air. It must be because they smell bad. If someone moves away from them, it must be because they smell bad. If someone looks at them and then looks away, it must be because the person's kind of disgusted by them. And so, you know, you can imagine if you misinterpret these very common scenarios, it makes it very hard to be around other people and to be in the workplace. So some of them are really quite impaired in terms of their both academic and occupational functioning and social functioning.
So in regards to treatment, how do we go about treating people with ORS?
Well, we have very little research data. It's really just published case reports, single cases or a small case series. We don't have any good, rigorous, even open label trials without some kind of control group. So the research is way behind that of other similar conditions like body dysmorphic disorder, OCD. There are case series and also just based on my own clinical experience with these patients indicating that the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, that class of medications, can be very helpful for these patients. So like the treatment of body dysmorphic disorder, like the treatment of OCD, that seems to be the preferred medication class. But again, not as much data to support that. But it makes sense because these are anti-obsession medications and anti-compulsive behavior medications, unlike the other antidepressants or other classes of drugs. So it makes sense that that would be the treatment of choice. And then these patients tend to be very depressed because you thought you smelled horrible and people thought you were reeking when you went out, you'd get depressed too. So there's a lot of depression, not always necessarily related to the ORS, but often. So we do recommend the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, and I tend to find I need to use the higher doses as we do for OCD and body dysmorphic disorder. There's some reports suggesting that antipsychotic medications can be helpful, also known as neuroleptics, even as single agents. We don't really know. Again, these are just small case series. I tend not to use that approach, partly because they usually have depression, so the SRIs will work with that. It will help, typically help that. And just the obsessions and compulsive behaviors really lead me to an SRI. However, some rather than an antipsychotic slash neuroleptic, but it may be that combining those two medications can be helpful. So what I typically do is start with an SRI alone and then get up to a high dose if necessary and if tolerated, which it often is. And then if that doesn't work, add in something like aripiprazole or one of the other neuroleptic medications.
Do you do exposures with people with ORS? And if so, what kind?
Yes. So there are some published cases in the literature. Interestingly, the great icon Isaac Marks, you know, back in the 1980s, treated a patient with BDD, and there are reports going back showing that exposure and ritual prevention can work, just as we would do for obsessive compulsive disorder, and it's part of the treatment for body dysmorphic disorder. What I do with these patients is I use a treatment manual that I and my colleagues developed for body dysmorphic disorder. It's Dr. Sabina Wilhelm, Gail Steckety, and I developed, tested, and published a treatment manual for body dysmorphic disorder. That's what I use for people with ORS, because I find that the treatment of ORS is closer to that of BDD than that of OCD. I think you have to work with the poor insight. You need a lot of motivational interviewing to get them willing to try the treatment, to keep them engaged in treatment. Because of the poor insight, they may rather go and get their sweat glands removed or get their tonsils taken out, thinking that that's going to help this perceived body odor, which they don't even have. So, you know, you need the motivational interviewing. I think it helps to do the cognitive work early on. I think the ritual prevention is important. And then also some gradual exposures to social situations. And you don't need the mirror retraining that we would do for body dysmorphic disorder. But I think the cognitively focused self-esteem work, that's part of the BDD treatment, can be very helpful. We find a lot of the deep, what we call the core beliefs in olfactory reference syndrome, are very similar to those in BDD. They're often about feeling that I'm not lovable, I'm worthless, I'm inadequate, I'll never find someone to love me. So we work on those kinds of beliefs using cognitive techniques. And people can do really well with this treatment. But the effectiveness of this treatment hasn't been tested for olfactory reference syndrome, but I find clinically it can be very helpful. And often I use it in combination with medication.
For those deeply entrenched beliefs, is there a particular cognitive technique that you find is the most useful? Or do you try to challenge those thoughts and try to find evidence? Or
yeah, we teach people about the cognitive errors that people make. I kind of frame it as we all make cognitive errors from time to time. We think we can predict what's going to happen. Oh, if I go to that party, no one will talk with me. Or mind reading, we think we know what other people are thinking. So we help them learn about these cognitive errors and then to learn to figure out whether they're making them in some of their odor-related thinking, and then to come up with more helpful and accurate beliefs. So we work on that, and then we find it helpful for them to do that before they do their exposure, make the exposure a little bit more tolerable, because these exposures are very hard for these patients, very, very difficult typically. And then we do have them collect evidence for people staring at them or, you know, laughing at them, and help them to think of alternative explanations when someone's looking at them, for example. So we don't push too hard or too fast, you know, with the exposures. We do a very gradual stepwise approach. We don't start by having them go to the mall, for example. We'll start with easier things. You know, we develop a sort of a fear ladder, a hierarchy according to the difficulty of the situations, and have them start with easier ones. Go out and just do them and collect their evidence and come back and figure out whether they're feared, whether their prediction came true. And it's always something horrible that they think is going to happen because they think people are going to perceive this horrible odor. And what did they learn? And can make very good use of this technique.
The sort of hardcore exposure for this, I think it would be, well, we're going to have you intentionally not shower for a couple days until you do smell, and now we want you to go take the bus. So why would that? I'm just curious. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm so glad you asked that question. It's so important because it also pertains to exposures in BDD. I don't recommend that because, for one thing, these people are pretty certain or completely certain that they really do look ugly in the case of BDD or smell bad in the case of ORS, and they don't. We want them to learn that they're not standing out of the crowd in a deviant way. And we don't want them to come back and say, yes, people were staring at me or laughing at me. They think that already. And the last thing you want to do is reinforce that belief. Just like someone with a psychotic illness, you wouldn't start telling them that all their hallucinations are true and they really should believe that they should kill themselves, for example, if they're having command hallucinations. So we really want them to learn that people aren't taking special notice of them in a negative way. And if you go out and make them super smelly, or in the case of BDD, put huge red spots on their face and put their hair in bizarre hairdos, they may attract unusual attention. So we want them to learn they're not getting special attention in any way. And we're also not sure that their anxiety habituates in the way that it does in OCD, for example, because they go out and around people and they may think that, you know, we don't know how well they habituate to simply being in front of other people. We're not sure that it happens. So really, we want them to learn that they're not standing out of the crowd in any kind of deviant way.
I'm just thinking, if I have ORS, the first person that I would probably go to is a medical physician. Mm-hmm. I'd go to my internist.
Yes.
Or I'd go to someone who specializes in you know, sweat glands and so forth. What would bring a person into a mental health facility for this condition?
Right. And you're right. We think about 40% of people go and seek one of these other kinds of treatments. And some get them, tonsillectomies and removal of their sweat glands and all kinds of procedures. People, you know, some people have heard of ORS. And the problem, though, is they tend to think they don't have it because often they say they can actually smell the odor and they've got poor insight problem. It's the same problem with body dysmorphic disorder. Many people, I think, who have it don't think they do because they think they really are ugly and they don't recognize that they're not. So it is a problem. And that's why patients with these conditions seek non-mental health treatment often. But they do come to us, and sometimes it's because someone else brings them. Concerned family member who's familiar with ORS or body dysmorphic disorder thinks they have it, knows the person looks normal, and kind of brings them to see us. Sometimes it's because they're very depressed over the effect of these worries. Sometimes they think there's something really is wrong with their body, but they know they're worrying too much about it or that their functioning is being impaired by it. And often that's a way that we can help people to engage in treatment, because you're not, your initial visit with the person, going to be able to convince them that they look normal in the case of body dysmorphic disorder, or don't smell bad in the case of ORS. Of course, you don't want to agree with their perspective either. But I think if you focus on how much they're worrying about it, how much it's causing them to suffer, how much it's interfering with their day-to-day functioning, their enjoyment of life. Maybe they're not going to school because of it. Maybe they can't work because of it. Maybe they can, but they're not very productive, or they're interrupted by the rituals throughout the day. Maybe they're not dating because of it. That's something you and the sufferer can both agree on. And that's something you can agree to work on in treatment. And I do talk with people about how, as best we know, these non-mental health treatments are not effective for either olfactory reference syndrome or body dysmorphic disorder, and sometimes makes those concerns worse. So there's no downside to trying the mental health treatments that we have. And we know for body dysmorphic disorder, from lots of clinical experience and lots of studies, or fair number of studies, that these treatments help the majority of people. ORS, we don't have as much research data, but we do have a little bit. And also, I can say, from based on clinical experience, most people with this condition can also get better with the serotonin reuptake inhibitor medication, often at higher doses, or the cognitive behavioral therapy that's tailored to the specific symptoms of ORS. So it's definitely worth giving those a try.
Dr. Phillips, thank you so much for joining us. It was really an honor and a privilege to have you on our podcast. So thank you so much.
Yeah, this information has been completely enlightening. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That's all the time we have today. You've been listening to the Stressless Life podcast. Send questions, comments, or episode ideas to thestresslesslife@dryip.com. Check out our website at www.dryip.com/podcast. If you like what you've been hearing, please write us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Until next time, stay stressless.